Welcome Frank Goddio to do this podcast with us. Frank is the president of the European Institute of Underwater Archaeology, and he's one of the world's foremost maritime archaeologists. He's also a senior visiting lecturer within the School of Archaeology here at the University of Oxford. Perhaps his most famous work has been in Egypt, where he rediscovered the ancient harbour of Alexandria and the sunken cities of Heracleion and East Canopus, although he also has extensive research interests in Cuba and the Philippines, where in conjunction with the National Museum of the Philippines, he's excavated ancient shipwrecks dating from the 11th to the 18th century. So I suppose the first question, Frank, must be, how did you get involved in maritime archaeology?
I have always been fascinated by history and archaeology. Although my studies were more mathematics and statistics, and I started my career in economics and finance, one day I thought, let us take care of the serious matter. And I dove in archaeology.
Excellent. So, in terms of underwater archaeology, what do you think are the main challenges?
The underwater archaeology require, I would say, more logistic than land archaeology. And the challenge is also not to disperse yourself and to have a good, like in land archaeology, to have good programs, you know, very well studied before you start any research.
So your research is really quite extensive in many, many countries. Could you tell us a little about each of the places that you work in?
Yes, of course. The main focus is the relation between the man and the sea. And of course, it does involve the trade, the migration, the discoveries, but also the ports. In Egypt, we are working on Alexandria Portus Magnus, and we map the city of the second part of the city of Alexandria. In Aboukir Bay in Egypt, we discover and map the cities of Heracleion, Tonis, and Canopus. And we are performing excavations there every year since now more than 12 years. For the Philippines, the focus is more trade relation in the Nanhai region between Philippines, China, Philippines and the surrounding countries. Philippines is an archipelago of 6,000 islands. That's, of course, trade relation and cultural interchange are by boat and by maritime route are essential to Philippine history. Thus, we started a very vast program in the 80s with the National Museum of the Philippines, and we are still going on with that program. We have also a project in Cuba, where we focus more on the discovery period of the America.
That's all very exciting. Underwater archaeology, though, is notoriously very expensive. How do you fund your projects?
Yes, underwater archaeology requires a very heavy logistic, I would say. And all those projects can be only funded by sponsorships. And we have sponsors which are following us for all our activities. And the ET Foundation is supporting my team since now more than 12 years.
So if we can first look at Egypt, what first drew your attention to the search for the sunken cities there?
When you consider that some texts are talking about cities which has never been found, which must have been port for some of them, and you see the coast of Egypt, and in that coast of Egypt, those cities were never discovered. Thus, you could think that natural phenomena made those cities to be to sink. You know, and my idea is that those cities were never discovered because they were not on land. And whoever looked for them and spot them by chance like that on land were doing mistake. Thus, with the Supreme Council for Antiquity of Egypt, we started a vast survey program in 1992. And thanks to that program, and thanks to a very heavy geophysics survey, which it's still lasting as a matter of fact, we were able to discover some very important archaeological site at more than 7 kilometers away from the course, actual course of present course of Egypt. And trying to identify those sites, we perform excavation, very spotted excavation, and we were able to identify, thanks to the artifact, the city as the city of Heraklion, Tunis, and then the city of Canopus.
So out of all the discoveries in Egypt, which do you think have been the most important?
There are of different, I would say, importance, but and a different type of importance. I would say that the mapping of the Portus Magnus of Alexandria is an important work which is still going on. Of course, the discovery of the city of Heraklion and the discovery of inscribed artifacts which prove that Heraklion and Tunis was one and the same city is also a nice achievement for the team. In Canopus, the discovery of the Temple of Serapis with the Naos of the Decade close by was a great achievement also for the team.
So clearly, the sites themselves have given a great deal of evidence about life in these port cities. If people are interested, how can they find out more about them?
Of course, we have done scientific publication, grand public books also, and movies about this. And you can refer to our site on the web. And there is a gallery of pictures, and there is also some scientific report and a progress report on all our activities. And I think it could be interesting.
And also there's the exhibition that's going around at the moment.
Yes, we have decided with the Supreme Council of Antiquity of Egypt to create a large exhibition which is called Egypt's Sunken Treasures. And that exhibition is traveling around the world and has had a beautiful success.
In Oxford, we're very fortunate in that we have a Centre for Maritime Archaeology, which you yourself helped to found. And we work in close collaboration with you. What was your decision? What was the reasons behind your decision to work with the University of Oxford?
I think with my team, we were working in so different times. So different field. We were involved in such different period of time civilization that to study all this material, to get the best of what we could map and find, we needed a kind of a huge reservoir of knowledge and science. And looking around the world, when you think about archaeology and science in history, the first word which comes is Oxford. And I thought there is in Oxford all the experts, the specialists, the knowledge which could help in Egypt, in the Philippines, in the America, to study and to publish all the material we are coming across.
Have you found any unexpected benefits of working with us?
I think the unexpected benefit is that at the beginning we made a collaboration on Egypt, and that collaboration is now widening and opening to the Philippines and maybe to the America. And I think Also, the fact that students are making their master's, their PhD on some material that we are finding, it's a great achievement, because It links history with the future, and I love that.
So you really enjoy the teaching aspect of your work with us?
Yes, I love to give some lecture, and what I love to do is to give some lecture on very recent result, which give life, you know, to what we are doing with the team, and also as a kind of interesting flavor for the attendants and the students which are listening to it.
And so do you have intentions to build up the Oxford participation in your team?
I would love to do this. We are working since 1985 with the National Museum of the Philippines, for example. We have still a huge program ahead of us to illustrate all the maritime trade in the Nanhai region with the National Museum of the Philippines. We have to perform a geophysics survey. We have to perform new excavation. And it will be beautiful if Oxford the Oxford Centre for Maritime Archaeology will be fully involved in the process of geophysics survey, excavation and publication.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the Philippines and the work that you're doing there?
We decided with the National Museum of the Philippines to study what is very important for the Philippines, the maritime trade. And to study it from the period of the North Song Dynasty up to the 18th century. And to illustrate the various period of time of that particular trade by finding the vector of that trade, that means shipwrecks, studying their cargo, what they were importing, what they were exporting, and to link that study with what has been found during archaeological excavation on land, mainly on burial sites, and to make a parallel between what is found on land and what is the origin of those ceramic, for example, or the type of artifact that we are finding on land, having them on the boat all together. Because once a boat arrives to a trading post, the goods are scattered, and they are also, I would say, discriminated. The rich people will take the very nice artifacts, the poor people would have taken the coarse ceramic, etc. And when you do excavation of burial site, you might not have the true picture of the trade, for example, of ceramic in a certain period of time. If you find a boat of that period of time, you will find inside the same boat the coarse ceramic, the very fine ceramic, but also all the objects which were imported at that time, the iron wok, the bronze gong, the bracelet in bronze, the iron ingots, the glass beads, etc. And you will have a clear idea of the world trade of that period.
So there clearly is an intense trading network that's happening in the South China Sea, in which the Philippines plays a major role. Do you think it's re-exporting the goods to elsewhere at the same time?
Of course. The boat that we are finding clearly indicate to us that there were... I don't know if we can speak about emporia, but let us say some port where good were gathered from different regions of the Nanhai and re-exported as a whole to other regions. It was a very complicated, very integrated trade and very busy trade.
It certainly seems as if it's one of the foremost periods of world trade, and is in many ways a forerunner of the trading systems that we have today. Do you make that explicit link within your work?
Yes, we do make that link, because after the internal trade of the Nanhai, that there has been a relay towards the Western country thanks to the Acapulco Galleon, which lasted for 200 years, that trade through the Pacific. Then after, you had also the direct link between Asia and a European or American country, thanks to the Indian man, which were linking directly Canton to Denmark or to Boston or to London, of course. Thus, we have a kind of a pattern which expands from the very beginning of the non-high trade, then towards the America to by Acapulco, and then directly to Western countries. And you can follow the extensions in the maritime trade during a period of 800 years.
And so you're clearly interested in this crucial period where there is contact with European colonial powers and the changes that happen. And you look at this in the Philippines, but also out in Cuba. Could you say a little bit more about your work there?
Yes, I am fascinated by the fact that the trade brings contact, cultural contact and cultural interchange. This has happened, of course, in the Philippines, but it has also happened in Egypt. The port of Heraklion was the main emporium of Egypt before Alexandria has been founded. And this, it was a place of contact, a place of cultures meeting there. And we have the archaeological proofs of that, and it's fascinating. The same for the Philippines. When you find, for example, the Spanish Guinean, and you see all the influence from the West, from the East, from the Arab world, in the artifacts that you are finding in that Guinean, you can understand the mixture of culture, the encounter of culture, and you can also understand that the trade were becoming global.
Turning now to the future, if you use a great deal of high technology in your work, mini submarines to dive to great depths and very sensitive magnetometers to map the seabed, where do you see technology going in maritime archaeology in the future?
I think we have to use the technology of our time to make our work more efficient. Of course, when we see how people were excavating 20 years ago, we say, oh, we are doing a much better work that people have done 20 years ago. But we have to expect that within 20 years, we look at our work and say, oh, what a disaster, what have we made there? We could have done an ADN study on this and on that, and that we have not done. Thus, I think all technology which could be applied should be applied. And one of the points which could help us a lot is, I would say, it seems very simple, but tagging an artifact, giving inside the artifact its identity and also its history. Of course, how this was done before. You had a nice tag and you were saying that artifact found in that position that year by this person, and very few elements of identification in it. If you could consider that you can put an electronic device, a microelectronic device, which we give all this information and which will be linked to that piece forever, it could be something very interesting when you consider all the objects that you find in the reserves of the museum. And you look at an object and you don't know from where it's coming, or you have lost its history. It's losing most of its interest for the science. And this is something we should study and we should develop, I think.
So finally, if you could pick out one single aspect of your work, one single find, one single idea that you've come up with, what would it be?
I would think that we could summarize all the work done by the team with one artifact. It's a steel, black granite steel, that we found in the city of Heraklion. That steel speaks about the trade, establish the city as an emporium. Speaks also about religious context link with the trade, and even social and commercial subject about the custom right that people have to be paid, but the custom right is for such a temple, etc. And then at the end, the still mention that that city of Heraklion is the city, the famous city of Tennis. Thus, in one artifact, you found this, I would say, a summary of all our work. Our work is about maritime trade, but it's about establishment of emporia and port. It's also about culture mixing each other, and we have the Greek here mixing with the Egyptian, etc. You have everything summarized in one piece. I would say it summarized 25 years of work.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much to Oxford Centre for Maritime Archaeology, and I think we will have a lot of work to do in the future.
Thank you.